Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Kevin Williamson of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Kevin, as always, good news, bad news, crazy news for conservatives. And we go back to the topic of Rand Paul's filibuster for the good news today. In a new poll from Gallup, they've asked the drone question in four different ways here, and Americans seem to pretty much be lining up with the Rand Paul approach here. I don't know if that makes most Americans wacko birds, but we'll find out, I guess, in the lexicon of John McCain. Do you support launching airstrikes in other countries against suspected terrorists? 65% say yes, 28% no. Do you support launching airstrikes in other countries against U.S. citizens living abroad who are suspected terrorists? 41% yes, 52% no. Do you support launching airstrikes in the U.S. against suspected terrorists living here who are not U.S. citizens? Only 25% say yes, 66% no. And how about launching strikes against U.S. citizens on U.S. soil? Only 13% say yes, 79% say no. Interestingly, more Republicans are actually in favor of the idea than Democrats and independents. But, Kevin, it looks like Rand Paul has struck a nerve if the public wasn't there already.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting to me, a couple of things. The question of strikes against Americans overseas is something that's been polled before. And this is a 50-point swing in that number. The public went from being broadly in favor of doing drone strikes against Americans who are terrorism suspects abroad to being sort of broadly opposed to it. That's really interesting to me. Now, the question of whether we can do it in the United States, I believe this is the first time that question's being polled. And it's not an enormous surprise to me that that most people are against that. And, of course, I think that the real thing here was that during the filibuster, Rand Paul read from my article on that subject, which I think probably, you know, was the real main thing that changed a lot of minds.
Yeah, clearly. And he's been articulate on that. He got a lot of attention for it, probably more than I expected him to get, even though he actually went to the old school filibuster. You figure that since it was obviously not a beneficial filibuster for the Obama administration, that the media would do their best to paper it over, but he managed to even cut through all the clutter of cable news and the internet and managed to get a lot of people paying attention to it.
Yeah, well, there's something to be said for the old school talking filibuster just as a sort of spectacle. And then, you know, Rand Paul is, you know, he's a fairly young guy. He's not what most people think of when they think of a Republican senator. You know, he's not Mitch McConnell. He's a fairly charismatic guy. And I think that there's something in a great deal of the American electorate that wants to pay attention when someone is getting up there and talking about, you know, basic foundational principles, basic constitutional questions, fundamental questions of how we live life. This isn't about whether the top tax rate is going to be 39% or 35.5%. This is something that's really, really sort of basic in the relationship between citizen and state. And it's not a surprise to me that when you address that question in a forthright way, that you change some minds and get some people interested.
Yeah, and he did a good job, or was it 13 hours, and got a little bit of help from his friends along the way. And that filibuster is a little bit of the silver lining to our bad martini today. This is a story out of Politico that reads, about 10 weeks after being sworn into office, Texas Senator Ted Cruz says he's been most surprised by the defeatist attitude from his GOP colleagues. Quote, the biggest surprise has been the defeatist attitude of many Republicans in Washington. A lot of Republicans felt beaten down and that there was nothing they could do to stop the erosion of liberty in this country. I'm referring to those who have been here a long time and have suffered some difficult election results and who I think were discouraged about being able to get anything done. He says he now feels that they might be turning a corner given the fact that the party is hung together on sequester, the filibuster on drones, and the recent vote that was ultimately unsuccessful, but the Republicans hung together to try to defund Obamacare in the continuing resolution. So we all kind of got discouraged, I think, by the election results and at other points when different debates don't go our way. But if you honestly feel like you have no hope, it's probably time to get out of office.
Well, you know, Cruz was surprised by their despair, and I'm surprised by his surprise because Ted Cruz is a very, very smart guy, but he's also a real scholar of conservative thinking. And as anyone who's paid any attention to conservative thinkers over the years knows, we're a pretty pessimistic group of people. Conservatives are sort of always naturally on the losing side of things because the natural tendency of mankind is not toward liberty and well-ordered society and people being free and self-governing. It's in the opposite direction. You know, we're always trying to shore up things as they collapse and trying to preserve as best we can, the best of what we have. And conservatism is always, in that sense, a sort of losing fight. Now, sometimes you get a great victory. You do something like establish the United States. You have an industrial revolution that radically changes human standards of living and our expectations of what life can be like. But those are kind of rare things. You know, those don't happen every year, every generation. So, you know, we're always trying to preserve things in the face of the barbarian invasion that someone said comes every generation, you know, your own children. So, I think conservatives ought to tend to be a little bit pessimistic. And certainly conservatives who are relying on Republicans in Congress to get stuff done should be really, really pessimistic, because these guys are, you know, with a few exceptions, of which Ted Cruz is a notable one, a bunch of hopeless jackasses.
Kevin, you need to just tell us what you really think, I think. Just lay it right out there. Well, like you said, there's plenty of ammunition lately on a number of issues, economic, social, and foreign policy in some cases, to provide that defeatist attitude, certainly, and especially when a president with a nearly 8% jobless rating and a lot of other factors going in the wrong direction not only gets reelected, but gets reelected fairly easily.
Yeah, you know, even think about the culture, you know, you think about the other side. And their most reliable, most electric issue for 30 years now has been abortion. Now, even if you're pro-choice, even if you're broadly in favor of abortion rights, the fact that you've got a political coalition that can absolutely be galvanized by this particular issue, by slaughtering the unborn in the name of sexual convenience, if you really believe in civilization, that should just kind of depress you and not expect much out of it.
Yeah, that's true. When we're playing on that level, it's kind of hard to get excited about the little victories, or at least delaying the losses. But anyway, let's hope for better things around the corner, especially with that nucleus that we've been talking about in the Senate, Cruz, Paul, and some others pushing in the right direction. But on to martini number three now, and Michael Bloomberg, mayor of New York City, mercifully, not for long, but by the end of the year, he'll be done as mayor of New York City. But his anti-gun crusade continues, and he took it to NBC's Meet the Press this week, where David Greger was talking about this multi-million dollar ad campaign that Bloomberg plans to run because, well, he's got the money to do it.
I think I have a responsibility, and I think you and all of your viewers have responsibilities to try to make this country safer for our families and for each other. And if I can do that by spending some money and taking the NRA from being the only voice to being one of the voices so the public can really understand the issues, then I think my money would be well spent. And I think I have an obligation to do that.
Two quick things immediately come to mind for me after hearing that, Kevin. First of all, the fact that he is on NBC and then saying that there's no other voice out there for his side on this issue strikes me as slightly ludicrous. And then when it comes to, you know, his list of there's salt and there's trans fat and there's the big sodas and there's styrofoam now, and I'm sure I'm forgetting something else. Wouldn't it make his day shorter just to talk about the things he doesn't want to ban?
Yeah, probably would. Now, I'm gonna get a lot of hate mail for this, and a lot of conservatives are going to sort of retch when I say this. But given that Bloomberg is a nanny and a would-be autocrat and a guy with a neurotic interest in big gulps and such things, we're going to miss him when he's gone. New York is going to miss this guy when he's gone, because the only thing anyone in New York City really cares about from a mayor is keeping alive the Giuliani legacy of basically keeping a lid on crime. And for all of the nonsense that Bloomberg has been up to in his administration, for all of his crazy little forays into micromanaging our lives, he really has preserved that. And the two or three people who are likely candidates to be succeeding him are a lot less likely to do that. So as much of a jackass as he is, as much of a clown as he can be, we're going to miss him.
I don't know if that says not very much for the New York City electorate or what, Kevin, given the fact that this guy and his approach to the role of government is beyond what we can expect from the current crop of replacement candidates.
Well, you think about it. I mean, the two most likely people, as I understand it, to replace Bloomberg, one is Joe Loda, who's the guy who's head of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the guy who's in charge of the subway system, basically, against whom I've been running a years-long Twitter campaign to have him publicly horsewhipped, because the transportation system here is so anarchic and so poorly managed and so awful. And the other one's Christine Quinn, who's a hardcore lefty type. So, you know, as bad as Bloomberg can be, I fear for what comes after.
Wow. We talked about despair in the second martini. I think what you just said is even worse, at least for the people who live there, especially conservatives in the city. But
well, you know, as a conservative who actually has to live in New York, You know, I care quite a bit about this. And I can remember, you know, just from having visited here, what the city was like before.
Sure.
And you go back and read and even look at pictures and news footage and stuff from the pre-Giuliani era. You don't want to live in that. You really don't.
So of the two, do you hold your nose or you just make other alternative plans on Election Day?
Well, you know, I mean, there's Connecticut. There's always Connecticut.
You can always add to the commute. Kevin, great to have you back with us today. Thanks for your time.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Kevin Williamson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join me and somebody else from National Review probably tomorrow as we take care of Jim's vacation days this week. And join us again for the Tuesday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.